Welcome to the Debunking the Myths and Misconceptions of the No Child Left Behind Discussion Draft conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. I would now like to turn the call over to Derek Richardson. Mr. Richardson, you may now begin.
All right. Thank you very much. Good morning, participants. I appreciate you all taking the time this morning to dial in for this important discussion, as we see it, a way of debunking the myths and misconceptions that are currently permeating around the No Child Left Behind discussion draft. First, I would like to ask everyone, if you have a question, Curtis will intimate this after a while. Once the question and answer period starts, I will prompt him. He will be able to take your questions and put them in the queue so that we can answer those through our participants. This morning, I will give a brief introduction of the speakers. We will then have an overview of CAHPS Educational Priorities by Cindy Brown, who's Director of Education Policy here at Center for American Progress. She will discuss our support, the Center's support for NCLB in the discussion draft, and also discuss various aspects within NCLB that CAHP looks to as priorities. We will then have a review of the discussion draft itself by Alice Kane, who's senior advisor to Chairman Miller, who's a co-author, sponsor of the discussion draft. She will discuss the state of play of the discussion draft and then an assessment of some of the misconceptions that are currently going on around the discussion draft. We will then have a moderated discussion period with Q&A from the individuals on the call. So, again, at that time, you will be able to submit your questions into the operator. He will instruct you how to do that. He will put it in the queue, and we will try to answer those as best we're able to. So right now, I'd like to turn the program over to Cindy Brown.
Thank you, Derek. As Derek said, the Center for American Progress is very supportive of the No Child Left Behind Act. We believe it has focused needed attention on low-income students who are not performing as well as we need them to perform, but there have been some implementation challenges and unintended consequences through the 5 years of the law that need to be addressed when it is reauthorized. And, of course, both committees and Congress are considering proposals to reauthorize the law. We at the Center are very supportive of the strong bipartisan leadership of Chairman George Miller and Congressman Buck McKeon, the ranking minority member on the House Education and Labor Committee. They have done a great job in putting forth a discussion draft on this very complicated piece of legislation. The Center for American Progress has several priority issues for the reauthorization of the No Child Left Behind Act, which is really a reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965. First of all, we want the law to maintain a strong accountability system. We need to be sure that all of our young people get a high-quality education, and we need to hold people accountable, educators and adults accountable for that. We believe that it's important to provide incentives through a demonstration program for expanded learning time in high poverty schools as a part of a strategy to help students catch up and close achievement gaps. We're also very excited about proposals to provide financial support through a Graduation Promise Act, actually, to turn around the 2,000 or so high school dropout factories so that we can reduce the unconscionable dropout rate in this country, especially among minority and low-income students. And the House Committee discussion draft has proposed a graduation promise fund that would do that. And finally, we're extremely supportive of enacting an exciting new proposal for a discretionary program for school districts to pay more to the highest performing teachers who commit to stay in the highest need schools for at least 4 years. We're so pleased that all these priority items of the Center are found in the House Committee discussion draft. So now I'd like to turn the discussion over to Alice Kane.
Oh, thank you. The draft, I guess there's a couple things to cover. sort of what the draft says and sort of some of the mischaracterizations about what it says, because sadly what's I'd say the press largely has not done their due diligence in reporting on it, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about what it actually says. But there's a number of areas where we feel like we've made real progress over current law. We feel like we've learned a lot over the past 5 years, and that there's some real issues that need to be addressed. The first issue, and probably what we've heard the most concern about, is the AYP system and the fact that under current law, a school is evaluated by comparing how students this year do with students last year. So you're sort of comparing apples and oranges, and schools are evaluated in that way. So we have added a provision allowing states to use growth models that measure growth of students, of the same students over time, which we just feel is a much fairer way of doing things. It's based on the administration's pilot program in this area, which has by and large gone well. There's about 12 states at this point that have been approved or provisionally approved to use a range of growth models. We say that the growth models that have been approved to date are sort of grandfathered in, and we also allow for models that have not been developed yet. There might be some good ideas between now and 6 years from now when the bill is reauthorized again. And so we lay out some broad principles or parameters for growth models that we feel are in keeping with the spirit of the law of proficiency for all children. But leave some flexibility for how states would do that. The second big change and the thing that we have probably heard the most about from other members of Congress as their biggest concern with current law is the fact that under the current system, schools are evaluated on the basis of basically a one test score on or two test scores on one day, the reading and math tests. And that's sort of the sole criteria for whether or not a school makes AYP. There's a lot of concerns about the fairness of that system. There's also a lot of concerns about the validity of that system. You know, as Cindy mentioned, one of the biggest concerns that is a huge concern in the Democratic caucus, and I think the reason why the current system has lost all credibility with them, is the fact that a number of them represent districts with the so-called dropout factories, the 2,000 schools in the country that produce about half of the dropouts in the country. And these schools have dropout rates of 40% or higher. And these schools, where they're losing literally, in some cases, half of their children, are making AYP. So the federal government is giving these schools the stamp of approval, while there's other schools down the street, at times the schools attended by the members of Congress, that are not making AYP. So the system, as we now have it, is broken. And the way we've proposed addressing that is through a system of multiple indicators. Where states look at other measures of how schools are doing. Some examples of the multiple indicators that are options that states can choose. One is if there's other statewide tests in other subjects, such as science or writing or social studies, that those test scores can be factored in. In elementary schools, if schools are doing a really good job moving students who are the furthest behind, the below basic category, to basic, and the students who are furthest ahead from proficient to advanced, then the school can get sort of extra credit for doing that and closing the achievement gap in that way. In the case of high schools, we look at graduation rate, and if a school is not doing well in that regard, they will no longer make AYP. So it's not just about how you do with the students that, you know, that are there, but it's also about keeping students in school. We also try to leverage some positive change in terms of the rigor of curriculum that's available by adding an indicator that schools that basically schools where students do better and show growth on things like AP courses or other college prep curriculum can get some credit for that. The key to this particular indicator is that for a state to get approved to use that indicator, the curriculum has to be available across the state. So if, you know, as the case right now, it's a lot of the suburban schools that offer those classes and urban schools do not. So the school districts and states would have to make that higher level curriculum available statewide as opposed to only pockets, as is the case in too many places right now. So those are the other indicators that are on the table right now. The third sort of big area that we've tried to address is there's a lot of concern about the one-size-fits-all nature of the current system, and that if a school does not make AYP, they're subject to the same interventions at the same time, whether they missed it by, you know, a handful of students or whether, you know, there's trouble and it's a school-wide. So we try to distinguish between the chronically struggling schools and the schools that are very close and lay out a set of interventions that are based on research on what actually helps schools turn around. And so try to take away the punitive nature and really replace it with helpful interventions, but allow schools to customize the interventions to their needs and to the students who need the most help. That's a big change from current law, and it's something that the members of Congress on our committee are very enthusiastic about. We also take a number of steps to really put the secondary back in the Elementary and Secondary Education Act and address the dropout crisis. We create a new graduation promise fund, which would be at least $1 billion to go to high-need high schools to help turn them around. And we actually lay out some very specific steps that this can help fund based on the latest and greatest research about turning around high schools. We also try to make some changes to the assessment and accountability system for English language learners and students with disabilities. There's a lot of concerns with the tests that they're required to take and the timing and how the scores count for accountability, and we have tried to really address those concerns from the vantage point of those kids and making sure they are still included in the system, but they're included in a way that that is fair to both them and the schools. We've taken specific steps in both cases there. And last but not least, in the area where there's probably the most misunderstanding about the discussion draft is the issue of building and elevating the teaching profession. And there are a number of proposals in the bill designed to support teachers, to help teachers, provide them with what they need to do their jobs well, including things like mentoring and induction programs for new teachers, professional development that's really aligned to the curriculum that they're teaching, training in the use of formative assessments and database decision making, assistance in learning how to do better with for mainstream teachers who are getting more and more English language learners in their classroom, specific training for that. And last but not least, a voluntary discretionary program for performance pay, where school districts working with the teachers and with the teachers' union could apply for funding to provide bonuses to teachers who are doing really an outstanding job in high-need schools in learning gains for students. This is something that has been completely misrepresented as, you know, tying teacher pay to test scores. And we've had numerous calls from numerous teachers who have been told that their pay would go down if test scores go down, and, you know, that their school districts could not get their Title I funds unless they applied for performance pay, and, you know, all sorts of things that just aren't in there. But what is in there is a new discretionary grant program for school districts that wanted to provide their teachers with bonuses for doing a good job. It's $10,000 a year for teachers sort of across the board, $15,000 a year for principals, and for teachers of high-need subjects such as math, science, foreign languages, teachers of special education, of English language learners, they could get up to $12,500 a year over 4 years in bonuses on top of their current salary. So a teacher doing a really good job could get $50,000 in bonuses over a four-year period. The message that Congress has heard loud and clear from the teachers is that they don't want this. And it's based largely on a real mischaracterization of what we're proposing. So why don't I leave it with that? I actually will make one other point. Another thing we hear frequently about No Child Left Behind is that the law is not adequately funded, and that is absolutely true. The funding is $56 billion over the past 5 years, less of what it was supposed to be. But one of the things that the Democratic Congress has done this year in the appropriation bill that passed the House is put an extra $6 billion into the education, labor, and HHS funds. So significant amount of money, and a large chunk of that is directed specifically to the ESEA programs in the areas that we're making changes. So we are really trying to provide the funding to go hand in hand with the new law, which we hope will be passed later this year.
Great, Alice. I appreciate that. Cindy, want to give you an opportunity if you had any other comments you wanted to make before we start the moderated discussion session.
Well, no, I think Alice did a great job of describing the bill and the discussion draft, the bipartisan discussion draft, and we hope it goes forward, but there needs to be clarification on some of the misconceptions, so I hope we can move to that.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. This time, Curtis, if I could start the Q&A session, if you would just give the instructions to the participants as to how they can get their questions lined up in the queue, and we'll go ahead and begin that portion of the dialogue.
Certainly, sir. If you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone now, and you will be placed in the queue in the order received. If your question has been answered or you wish to be removed from the queue, please press pound. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. Sir, it appears at this time we have no questions.
Okay. I guess I'll ask a question of Alice. Are there any other sort of issues that have floated back up to the top from the states I think you did a great job of outlining some of the misconceptions or misunderstandings that are going on. Have you heard any other sort of thoughts from the states that may hamper dialogue around this?
I think what we've done in the discussion draft is try to address the main things that we have heard. I would be interested if there's folks on the line with specific, areas that if they feel like they have concerns that have not been addressed, it would be helpful to hear what those are. But we feel like, by and large, we have addressed the big things that have been presented to us as problems.
So from the participants, again, if you have questions, feel free to press star 1 and get in the queue and ask those questions. I think a part of the discussion here today is to, you know, simplify this and put the information out there in an accurate manner so that individuals who are following this, who may be hearing things that they have some concern or some interest about, can get clarity from those who are working from the inside on the issue. Okay. Well, if there are no questions, I would just thank everyone for participating today. We hope that this has been helpful and informative. If you have any follow-up that you would like from the Center for American Progress or from Alice, if you could forward your information to myself. Again, my name is Derek Richardson. I'm with the Center for American Progress, and I can be reached at drichardson@americanprogress.org. So, again, if there are any questions, any follow-up to the conversation, if you would just forward that information along to me, I'll try to get your issues or questions answered or looked into in an expeditious manner. So thank you for dialing in today, and at this time we will end the conference call.